Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, it's good to be back. I've either been iced in or mudded in on my farm, and so here I am back on concrete and Ames.
Yes, with us and our very first guest. Greg Vitale is from Outdoor Alliance of Story County, and he's here with us to introduce his group and tell us about a couple of new Story County parks that they've been working on. But that's just the beginning of today's program. We'll follow his report on the parks with a phenology of what you may find in the parks at this time of year, woodpeckers. Our next stop will be Cambridge, where it's a bad year for tomatoes, dinner theater in the new Cambridge City Center. Finally, we'll have a couple of genealogists to introduce us to the work of the Story County Genealogical Society.
Well, I think we better get started. We're going to welcome Greg Vitale. Thanks for coming, Greg.
Thank you. It's the earliest I've been out of the house for a while.
Yeah, you're here. Well, I'll tell you what. He represents the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, and we better begin by talking about what that animal is.
So since about 2010, Story County Conservation had been talking about setting up a friends group, a 501c3 group. And I kept asking board members of Story County Conservation Board, Ted Tedasco and Jim Pease and the director, Mike Cox, well, how's that 501c3 come in? Because, you know, I'd like to contribute. And I did that for a few years. And Mike Cox finally turned to me and said, why don't you do it?
Oh, really?
And I said, well, I could try. So that entailed putting a group together and filing a 501c3 application process, including filing with the state of Iowa and then the IRS.
And so now this organization exists and people can contribute to this organization. Now, what's its role vis-a-vis the conservation folks?
There's been talk about a friends group for Story County Conservation for decades now, ever since they tried to build a lake north of Ames. And that idea would pop up every so often. And I think what prompted the action now is people wanted to donate to Story County Community Foundations and get the Iowa tax credits that associated with that. But there wasn't a 501c3 partner for Story County Conservation. And I think that was the big driver why it finally happened now.
That's great. Now, people don't realize the economic impact of our parks and trails. And it's something in the neighborhood of $18 million.
It's a substantial driver. And in places like Zeering, where they just expanded the Dakin's Lake area, it's going to be a breath of fresh air in a town that was under duress.
Right. A lot of small towns are in duress, as we say. And up there in Zeering, I'm aware that that really is a real attitude changer in town. And when you look at that $18 million impact, you look at the attractions like trails or parks, recreation areas. Everybody has to buy the gas at a gas station. They have to eat in local restaurants. They have to do something that drops money in that county and city. And so, you know, we probably overlook just what kind of multiplier that is economically. So parks and trails are very much something that gives back, for sure. Now, your organization, how do they augment and do creative things with the Conservation Commission?
So sometimes grants are available, but they're not available to government agencies. And the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, working with Story County Conservation, has filed for a few grants, and we've gotten a few of those successfully filed. And so we found money that we could then use for Story County Conservation projects.
So really, that gives you eligibility for grants that the organization itself didn't have before.
That Story County Conservation didn't have before, that's right.
So that's an important thing right there, because what a funding source.
That's right. That's right. And the Story County Conservation Board and Director Mike Cox, the supervisors were all behind them getting a friends group established because the supervisors realized they couldn't support conservation, outdoor recreation, and education at the level they wanted to with their own budget. So they knew the budget needed to be augmented, and that's where the Outdoor Alliance of Story County.
Now, date that for me. When did the Outdoor Alliance begin? When you officially started and started to be productive with producing money and resources?
We got our 501c3 status letter from the IRS in December of 2013. And up until then, we were doing internal things almost exclusively. But we started being active in 2014.
So this is relatively new. Let's talk about some of the things that have happened, some of the planning that's going on. And I know there's a meeting coming up. You might tell everyone about this meeting that's coming up very soon and who the speakers are and what you plan to do. This is another opportunity for the general public to become involved with the Outdoor Alliance. And so please tell us about this meeting, Greg. What's going to happen?
On March 8th, from 6:30 to 8:30, at the ISU Research Park at 1805 Collaboration Place in the atrium, there'll be a series of three speakers talking about Ames' newest park, Tadasco Environmental Learning Corridor, which is approximately 37 acres that are surrounded by the industrial park, which will have an aesthetically pleasing retention pond and trails, overlooks and shelters and other amenities for the people in that area to take a short rejuvenating break and for the general public.
Now, locate that for the folks out there familiar with Ames. Where exactly will this be?
If you take University Boulevard south from Highway 30, you'll come to a series of three traffic circles as you go south on University Boulevard. And at the third traffic center, you take the choice you have going east. And that is where the collaboration hub is.
Okay. Now, is this where the meeting's taking place?
And that's where the meeting will take place on March 8th.
And then when the park is actually developed, tell us where that will be.
It will be adjacent to several of the buildings in the research park, and roughly just slightly north of the collaboration place.
So now, what's been done thus far? The land's been acquired, is that right?
The land's acquired. I believe it's in Story County Conservation's jurisdiction now, in spite of the fact that it's in the city of Ames.
So it's within the city limits?
Yes. And that's my understanding.
What's been done now? Anything physically?
Yes, they've made the pond. They've taken out some of the invasive species, and they've done other landscape working, such as bank stabilization of a little seasonal or small stream.
Have they been planting trees out there too?
That's in the process, but that hasn't happened yet.
And so what they do when they plant trees, nowadays you have to pay great attention to species and what their characteristics are, what their disease resistance. I'm assuming they're planting a variety of trees that are in line with what's happening in the tree disease world now, right?
I'm not tracking that at this point in time. The design work is still being done for those secondary stages at this point in time.
Now, with this meeting coming up, you have two speakers, it says, Mike Cox, now he's director of the Story County Conservation, and Tom Eisenhart, National Resource Ecology and Management. Now, who is Tom and what is the Resource Ecology and Management Organization? Is that federal?
That's ISU. That's ISU at the university. They've consolidated some of the research departments and I think that's part of what that's going on there.
So when this meeting happens, this is a general information for the general public to come and take a look at this and questions will be asked and answered, and I'm sure there's a lot of graphic material that will show the park and what the concepts and drawings are and what the expectations are for the project. Sounds like a great idea, and it's right here. In Ames, there's already, I believe, a real fine park system. When you drive down Duff and you go by Innis Grove, there are all kinds of parks all over the city, and I think that this will be another one down in that part of the city, which is kind of out there in the southwest corner. And I think that, you know, when all of us are older, I can't get much older than I am, and all the trees are mature, just think what a beautiful place that will be and what a great place for people to recreate, hike, and all kinds of things you want to do outdoors when it's better weather than we have right now. So you're really a believer, Greg. You want this to happen.
Yes. People are healthier, happier, more productive when there's opportunities nearby to go outside and to be outside for a little bit. The health benefits and other benefits may stump the economic benefits, actually, the direct economic benefits.
Oh, yeah. You know, I went to school up in Luther College in Decorah, and up there they have a small town, but about six parks. And, of course, they're blessed with all kinds of limestone cliffs and a fast river, the Upper Iowa River. And, you know, here we're in more flat land, and you have to create timber in some of these things that are a break in the agricultural landscape. And so it's quite an ambitious project, and you have to be able to see in the future and perceive what this is going to look like. And I'm sure that at that meeting, that'll be covered when you look at the drawings and all the concepts of what it'll be as a mature tree-lined place, you know. So it's going to be a great thing, and I think that probably you might remind us again of the location and time of this meeting, because this is new in Ames, and it's something that everybody can benefit from. And we've already talked about the great economic benefits that come with parks and trails. So talk about this meeting once again. Where is it? When? Who will be there and who will be speaking?
So the meeting will be March 8th from 6:30 to 8:30 at 1805 Collaboration Place in the atrium. That's at Iowa State University's Research Park, just south of Highway 30 off of University Boulevard. And Iowa State University Professor Dr. Tom Eisenhart will be speaking. The Director of Story County Conservation will be speaking. And one of the engineers, Luke Monat, will be speaking.
Now tell me about some of this local support. We've got some grants that have been used from local organizations. Who's been involved so far to grant money to this organization?
So Kohl's has a Kohl's Care, the retail store, yeah. And they have a grant program that's only eligible for non-governmental agencies. And so they contacted Story County Conservation, but we started the partnership with them about 3 years ago now.
And they got a $500 grant here initially, right?
Yes, and in the past they've done a few bigger grants.
And so you anticipate this continuing relationship will continue to be a contributing factor to your organization. Kohl's is going to stay involved with this.
That's our hope. That's our hope. And they're the ones that provide volunteers. Part of the donation is so many volunteers have to contribute as well. So that's when we do work projects, too,
so
with them.
Not only financial, it's man and woman power, too. Huh? They're going to come out there and do some physical work.
Yes, that's right.
What an opportunity. That's great. Then Danfoss also is involved. You might explain that.
It's actually Danfoss's parent company in Denmark that was involved, but it all connected back to Danfoss and personal connections with retired vice president kind of level people.
And this is a sizable grant.
It was a sizable grant. That happened in 2017, the very end of 2017, and it was $10,000. And I think that's the first time that the parent of Danfoss ever donated locally.
Is that right? Well, you know, that's a great way to start. You know, you talk about investing in quality of life. It's a real tangible gesture to the host community for your corporation. to do that kind of work because, you know, what's bad about a park? Think about it. Who could oppose this idea? And if they are, there's something wrong in their head. I mean, parks are so universally beneficial.
Well, actually, that Danfoss grant, what was that for? That was that used for?
So the Danfoss grant was part of the Outdoor Alliance of Story County's efforts to raise funds for another park on the south edge of Ames. If you notice the Hunziker Sports Complex just south of Highway 30 on the west side of the Skunk River, and you go downstream, we'll say half a mile, there's a bridge, 265th Street Bridge. And on the northeast corner of that bridge in the river is a 275-acre tract referred to, it's a kind of a mouthful, the Ronald Dick Jordan Family Wildlife Area, okay, or Jordan Acres, 275
acres. Danfoss grants going directly to that?
Yes.
Okay. Is that for land purchase and development? Or?
It's for land purpose primarily, but some modest land development too.
And so that's a whole other area.
Yes, another land acquisition for Story County Conservation.
Now, when you look at your Outdoor Alliance, I assume you have a board. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so they are the ones who have some power to probably respond to requests by the Conservation Commission and also coming up with their own ideas of how to spend the monies that they raise. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're right on the board. Is that right, Greg?
Yes, I'm the treasurer.
You're the money guy. Okay. Well, it's really a great idea. And the Story County Outdoor Alliance, it's going to be an organization that I hope sustains itself. And as you pointed out, you know, there's budgetary things the government's involved with, and that's a finite amount of dollars. And this is a way for people to get out there and support things that go beyond what the government can do. And the money's not going to be available for a lot of things that are on the wish list for people who care about not only our environment, but the recreational opportunities. And implied in that is everything we hope for the future. People and their families going out to picnic, building memories at these places of grass and trees where we get some feeling of who we are and where we come from. And we actually credit our people who've done things like you and your organization to make sure these things not only happen, but that they're beautiful and have all the things that maybe the government couldn't buy, but you can. And so I really think that's a great organization. It must be satisfying for you to be involved with that.
It's very exciting to be involved with this at this stage, which is still an upstart organization.
Well, the real thrill is, if I were in your shoes, I'd say, I'm Greg Vitale. I was present at creation. Then I took the seventh day off. So you can be very proud that you had a leading role in making this happen. And you're a young man by my standards, so you can be involved with this for a long time.
Yes,
but
that's
right. You are a founding father, so take a bow, Greg. And this meeting comes up again March 8th. What day of the week is that? That's Thursday, I believe.
Thursday, that's correct.
March 8th, and it's going to be out there in the research point. Well, tell me specifically what area that is again, because we want people to be out there and be aware of this and talk to the people who are putting this together and can explain exactly what it is.
So the presentation will be about Ames' newest park, the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, and it will be March 8th at 6:30, from 6:30 to 8:30 at 1805 Collaboration Place in the atrium, which is at the ISU Research Park in Ames. And you can find more information on our website, Outdoor Alliance of Story County.
Very good. Now, our guest today was Greg Vitale from the Story County Outdoor Alliance, and he's been informing us about the new park at Ames. Please come to the meeting he described and help Greg be present at creation, okay? Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you. In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and you've just heard from Greg Vitale of the Outdoor Alliance of Story County. When you think about parks, it's natural to think of birds. And our nature reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, has prepared a phonology for us about woodpeckers, especially pileated woodpeckers. Let's listen.
Phonology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. Think of phonology as a daily diary of nature. The first bluebird of spring or the last osprey of autumn are written in a journal for future comparisons. Today's phonology is about woodpeckers, and especially the pileated woodpeckers. Many woodpeckers have the habit of tapping noisily on tree trunks with their beaks. Their drumming becomes territorial in nature to alert suitable mates in their areas. Woodpeckers' reinforced skulls and neck allow them to hammer without harming their brains. These birds prefer large trees in which to nest. Forest fragmentation likely reduces population density and makes birds more vulnerable to predation. In the early 20th century, pileated woodpeckers were hunted, though the practice has since been outlawed by the Bird Treaty Act of 1918. That legislation stopped the harvest of songbirds for food and feathers for the hat industry. Now that the emerald ash borer is killing Iowa ash trees, a productive habitat of dead trees will benefit woodpeckers in Iowa, predictably. Woodpeckers love fat-enriched protein or suet, especially in winter. It has been said that birds cannot taste. Taste is less well-developed in birds than it is in humans. A parrot has 300 to 400 taste buds, while humans have 9,000. So most birds can perceive sweet, sour, and bitter tastes. A bird that lives on nectar and fruit will prefer sweet taste, but sweets don't appeal to the grain eaters. Yet the varieties of mixtures that woodpeckers prefer seems to indicate there is some form of tasting going on with woodpeckers. Or maybe it's simply a knowing of what foods are fresh and not rancid, or contain the most protein. For many years, woodpeckers, where I live, have enjoyed a cornmeal concoction. The mixture recipe was one part bacon grease to four parts cornmeal with enough peanut butter to create a dough ball. A wooden log, 6 inches in diameter, has been outfitted with a series of 1-inch holes that are 2 inches deep. The cornmeal mixture is pressed into those holes. And woodpeckers love it. And the hanging log has a substrate where the woodpecker benefits from a board or the log for its tail. Oh, in case you're like me and cooking less and less bacon, the Crisco shortening that sets up when cooled will suffice. Pileated woodpeckers are one of 7 Iowa woodpeckers. They are the largest of the common woodpeckers found in most of North American continent. The Artoptimus, crow-sized birds, present a memorable sight with their zebra-striped heads and necks and distinctive flaming red crests. The bill is long and chisel-like, about the length of the head. Pileateds are the cartoon woody woodpeckers of our youth, and their calls seem right out of the jungle. Thirty years ago, bird surveys indicated pileated woodpeckers were only found east of Interstate 35, and primarily in northeast Iowa. When they arrived in the Ledges State Park, west of Ames, about 20 years ago, their presence created quite a welcoming stir. Since that time, future expansion has grown to include far northwest Iowa, beyond the Iowa Great Lakes. Today, pileated woodpeckers are fairly common and numerous across the nation. Their population steadily increased from 1966 to 2014, according to the North American Breeding Bird Surveys. Partners in Flight, a non-governmental organization for conservation, estimates a global breeding population of 1.9 million. As the urban forest matures, birds like pileated and barred owls are moving into our urban backyards. Pileated woodpeckers forage for their favorite meal, carpenter ants, by digging large rectangular holes in trees. Once a pileated has gone to work on a dead tree, the size of rectangular holes and pieces of wood cast aside from their hammering is quite noticeable and distinctive to pileated excavating and sculpturing. But they also forage on the ground and supplement their diet with fruit and nuts. Woodpecker popularity partially comes about because they enjoy living in and around residential areas. That makes them great photography subjects. Once their home cavity is located, there will be repeated opportunities to capture their images as they come and go. Share your woodpecker pictures and stories with the community. They're a good one that makes cavities for nuthatches, chickadees, bluebirds, and tree swallows. They're the best friend to those secondary cavity nesters there are. Woodpeckers are a good one, and that's our phenology featuring pileated woodpeckers. And this time of year, they love the suet and high-protein fat at your backyard feeders. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOY Community Radio 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
Well, this is KHOY Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts today, Paul Wearson, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. And it's time to leave our focus on nature and see what's happening in Cambridge, Iowa. Susan, I believe you had a visit last week from Marcia Kisner. Now, she's pastor of Nazareth Lutheran Church there, and they had a problem at her church and found a rather original way to take care of it, right?
That's right. I read in the Tri-County Times that the church was going to produce a comedy, A Bad Year for Tomatoes, so I thought it would be interesting to see how they could do it. I got to know Marcia a few years ago when she was organizing the summer festival at Cambridge, Skunk River Valley Days, and I enjoyed her enthusiasm. As you'll see from her interview, she still has it. We were in Cambridge a few weeks ago visiting their new Cambridge City Center, which has a beautiful big room behind the library
and the city offices.
And we could see that it would be a lovely place to have a dinner or a party.
And already we have the opportunity to cover something that will be in that space.
It'll be dinner theater, and I know it's large enough that you probably will be able to seat everybody who wants to come for dinner. You don't even have to make reservations in advance, is that right?
Well, we would like you to, just so that we have an idea of how much food to make.
I know you have that great, big, beautiful restaurant kitchen in the city center. I know also, because you told me, that you didn't just decide to do dinner theater there just for the fun of it, that it's a sort of necessity is the mother of invention. So could you tell why you decided to do a play?
We were sitting around at fellowship after church, and our church is 115 years old. And we had been having trouble with the bell tower, and so we needed to have it fixed. And actually, it was sort of amazing that we found anyone, because we had tried a couple of years ago to find someone to come in and look at it, and we couldn't find anyone. And we did. A local company, Hedrick Construction, came in and repaired it. The wood had been so rotten. So the bell tower is 115 years old also. And so we had the rotten wood taken care of and painted and spiffed up, but it was costly. So we decided that instead of a normal bake sale, we would do something fun. And there's a number of us that I was a theater major in college, and now I'm a pastor, so I'm not sure how that all connects together. And I was sitting with another member who does community theater and is just a wonderful actress, and we decided to do a play for the fundraiser. And the dinner seemed to go along with it, since we had the new city center.
Before we get into the play, I would like to know, this is the original bell, right?
Yes, it is. And I didn't know that until this week. I was talking to a member whose family has been there the whole time, And he told me he remembers his mother talking about it, them putting up the bell. And it's one large bell that we ring every Sunday and at weddings. And I let the confirmation kids practice on it, too, so they can learn. And then also inside is a hammer for a tolling bell that we do use at funerals.
So it really is a community bell.
Yes, it is.
Not just for the Nazareth Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful tradition, and we continue using it. And since we repaired it and painted it, I think it looks beautiful. Each Christmas we put Christmas lights up, Christmas candles, 3 feet tall. And so it really does. It lights up the area.
The bell, you say painted. You mean the wood you painted?
Yes, yes.
The bell is it bronze?
I haven't seen it in years, but yeah.
And how do you ring it?
There's ropes down to the entrance.
You said ropes. You need more than one?
Well, the hammer for the tolling bell is on a separate rope from the bell. If you ever want to visit, we'll let you ring it.
Well, let's get to A Bad Year for Tomatoes. That's
okay.
The play you chose. So tell a little about why you chose that play.
The main reason was our star, Joyce Allen, had done the play at Ankeny Community Theater several years ago. So we wanted something that she was familiar with. We invited a couple of, our members call them ringers from the Ankeny Community Theater to bring in, and then some of our local members who just love theater. And so I'm also in it. I play Willa Mae Wilcox. I'm a little crazy. I'm a neighbor that wants to know everything. So it's just fun. It's a comedy about a woman who moves into a small town and has no idea what she's going to get into.
And where does she move from?
She's a Hollywood actress, and she's trying to get away. So she moves to Vermont in a small house and has all these neighbors coming in to find out her business. And she's trying to write a book. And that's when she uses one of her former characters to get rid of all the neighbors. And then they think that she murdered the person. And so the final scene is just, I think it's, hilarious.
Well, a spoiler alert. Don't tell us any more than that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Actually, having just gone to see Almost Maine at the Ankeny Community Theater last night, I think you're very lucky to have some ringers coming from Ankeny.
Oh, we are.
And I've seen Michael Porsche here at Actors last year. And so I think this should be a play worth traveling for.
We consider ourselves very lucky to have such talent come in. And we're hoping that people will come and enjoy the evening.
It's Friday, March 2nd. This is the dress rehearsal, and it says a free will offering.
Yeah.
And Saturday is the dinner, and the dinner's from 6 to 7 on March 3rd, and the show time is 7:30. And so I guess people, if they want to just see the play, they can come to the Sunday matinee at 2.
Definitely. We're just taking reservations. And you can call the number 515-383-4328 and then come that evening, and you can bring your credit card or debit card. We have a little machine, and we would gladly take your donation and for this wonderful evening. And we're so excited that we can introduce it at the new city center in Cambridge. The city council was just so kind to us and just letting us come in and do this performance, because I would love to see us do more in the future using the city center in this way.
Thank you. Is KHOI Community Radio. And you just heard from Pastor Marcia Kisner about how they kept the church bell ringing in Cambridge, made full use of the new City Hall, and will have a lot of fun.
Well, this is KHOI FM 89.1 Story City, Ames and surrounding area. Now for a change of pace, we're turning to genealogy here in Ames at the public library. I'm eager to hear about it today. It's a topic that utilizes for many different techniques, such as DNA testing to searching records on the computer. And Story County Genealogical Society has partnered with the Ames Public Library to provide ongoing genealogical programming about the genealogy proof standard course. And we have Alice Hoyt Veen, certified genealogist. She's with us today to tell us about the Genealogy Proof Standard course she and Linda Greenhurst will be teaching at the Ames Public Library on March 10th. And we have Mary Logsdon, Adult Services Director at the Ames Public Library, and she is with us to tell us about the many services the library provides for genealogists with all ranges of experience. Welcome, Mary and Alice.
Good morning.
And, Mary, background in history, the Story County Genealogical Society.
Yeah. Right. Well, actually, I'm really happy to have a chance to talk with you about all that the Story County Genealogical Society has done for the library and so the whole community. For a couple of decades now, we've been partnering with them in order to actually add books to our collection. I mean, that's how the partnership began a number of years ago. And experts at our local genealogical society advised us on materials that we could purchase so that local genealogists could get started on their research. But we are doing so much more than that now. And as you pointed out, there are programs and classes occurring at the library thanks to this partnership. And they have been so well attended, and the enthusiasm that is generated among folks who are new to the topic as well as experienced genealogists has really been so gratifying for me to see as a librarian.
How long has this been going on, this partnership?
Well, you know, soon after we moved into our terrifically renovated and expanded library back in 2014, both Nancy Long and Bonnie Samuel from Story County Genealogical Society reached out to me and said, hey, we have a concept for a monthly series. We'd like to try it out. And that was 2015. We began that in this January through May. And it was a monthly program in which they invited a expert on a particular topic to come and speak in the auditorium in general to the audience and then invite folks to stick around for about an hour or so to give them some hands-on assistance in doing some research. So I would say from 2015, so we're entering – we've completed 3 years now. That was so successful that then they developed a 9-month program the following year, September through May.
Now, do you have a handle on how many people have been participating?
Yeah, absolutely. For that monthly program, we have anywhere between 30 and 40 people
really?
Who come. Yeah, it's on the third Wednesday of every month, and that's called Genealogy Plus. Each month, a knowledgeable presenter discusses a different topic related to genealogy. They provide some research tips and techniques. But yes, there's a nice crowd from 10 to 12 in the morning on the third Wednesday of each month.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you have this presentation, I suppose the first question is, how do I get started? You know, how do I get started? You can help them with that, right?
Right. So the individuals from the society are on hand to sit down and, you know, just get people more comfortable with the idea that they can do this. And it's not going to all happen in one day. From what I've observed, this could turn out to be a lifelong pursuit. And I know Alice can talk about that, too. But, yeah, we help people get started and give them the confidence to just really fuel that enthusiasm and interest.
Well, you know, every family seems to have one family member who is the self-appointed historian. I mean, even from childhood, they're the one who's interested in the origins of the family, the history of the family, and usually that takes place with one or two generations back, you know, great-grandpa. I happen to be the one in our family. And at my farm, where my parents began farming with horses in 1930, I have all the stuff from my mom and dad and what they've gotten from their parents, plus all my stuff. In fact, a friend of mine brought his son out to sell popcorn for Boy Scouts, and I showed him around the house. And when he got back in the truck, he said, "Dad, Paul lives in a museum." So I'm the guy, and certainly the grandchildren, my parents' grandchildren, the daughters and sons of my siblings, there's one or two people that want to do this. Now, what sort of tools can people use? If they're going to get off on this tangent of checking their genealogy, what are the tools they can use?
I think maybe I'll turn it over to Alice to answer that question, because my observation is there are many. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Alice Veen, you're going to be doing a course, so.
Yes, yes. My co-instructor, Linda Greethurst, and myself will be teaching a kind of intermediary level course to help people kind of bring their research up to speed if they're having some problems.
So some of the people in your course are already down the pike a little ways in doing this pursuit. And so you're saying here's the next step.
Yes, absolutely. Although this, you know, if you've been taking some beginning level classes and you've got a start on your family project, this is also a great course for you as well. And when you were talking about there's always one person in each family, or perhaps more than one, but they're keeper of everything is what I call them.
I'm the keeper of everything.
And if you are just starting out, you either want to be the keeper of everything, so people in your family are going to give you these things you're looking for to help you on your project, or you'll want to find the person in your family that's already got a lot of this in their possession that they can share. And it's always surprising how much people have that they didn't realize they already had among their papers, scrapbooks, photographs, old documents that can help them get started.
So could you say that one of the starting points is organizing what you already have?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Making sense of that.
Yes.
Which will probably be your generation and the one prior, that you really have a lot of physical things and papers and.
The easiest way to begin a new genealogy project is to begin with yourself and your immediate family. Mm-hmm. And then as you accumulate information about yourself, you work backwards one generation at a time. And that's a good way to start. And genealogy really is connecting individuals to families and families to generations. So it's the connections between people. And once you get those connections started and get a handle on who your family is, then you want to kind of take it that next level and begin to collect the stories associated with those people. And bringing those people back to life is true family history.
So it's not just designing a family tree and going back X number of generations. It's who these people are, what's their story, how does that connect with us today?
Absolutely. We can learn so much from our past.
That's very true. I'm a history nut, too, so you're hitting all my weak points
today.
But I really think that the great partnership you have at the library is really going to make a splash here, because number one, people need a place to relate to.
Right.
Where do I go for this?
Right.
Now, your library, there's a lot of material already there, isn't there?
Right. Of course, we do have print materials. We have reference materials and also books that people can check out, how to get started on genealogy research. We have subscriptions through the library. If you have a library account, you can get to Ancestry Library Edition. You have to access that in the library. We have a subscription for individuals who come into the library. They can use that. And also another database called Heritage Quest. These resources are really powerful. I think a lot of people have the misconception that you can just Google your family name and, you know, by some magic, the whole story is going to be revealed to you, which, of course, is not the case. But these databases are really quite powerful. There are census records and military records and gravesite information, just really, really rich. And so those resources are available through the library. And the library actually considers programming to be a resource as well. So when we host these sorts of events, as I mentioned, Genealogy Plus was the first. We know that we're giving people opportunities to learn from others. And so that's really been gratifying to see. And then that has continued to grow, because from that beginning, we also then started genealogy basics and intermediate classes. And then what we're doing now, what we're really eager to get people interested in registering for, is the genealogy proof standard, which is a 4-part specific training session that will begin on March 10th. And that's what Alice and Linda will be sharing. And I think it's just even more structured series where folks can really dig in. So our resources are many. They are print as well as digital, and then the people resources.
So this is on March 10th. We want to make sure our audience knows this meeting's coming up. March 10th.
Correct.
At the library.
Right.
When?
It's a 4-part series. So March 10th will be the first one, and it's a 4 hours, 12:30 until 4:30. So if you're there are four Saturdays. It's a Saturday.
So if you're working, you can be there. It's a Saturday.
Absolutely.
So I'm putting in a Saturday afternoon.
It's four Saturday afternoons. This has kind of slipped back. We kept talking about the March 10th. Yeah. No, it's March.
There are several.
Yes. March 10 kicks it off.
Are they consecutive Saturdays?
No, they are not. Is this a good time to give the dates, do you think?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So the first session is March 10th. The second is March 24th. Then April 7th and April 21st. So in March and April, there are four-hour classes, and they are all on Saturdays, 12:30
to 4:30. I like it spaced out like that, because then you have a planning stage. I can set aside a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
If you had them on consecutive Saturdays, that would prohibit attendance for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of attendance, we are encouraging people to register because there are resources that we are going to have available, and there is limited seating. And so I invite you to go to our library website or give us a call. We'd be happy to help people register.
You're encouraging people to pre-register?
Yes.
If someone walked in the door, though, they would –
I think we would likely give them a seat and invite them to observe, and we don't turn people away. But if you register, you're guaranteed a spot with materials, handouts, et cetera. So it would really be beneficial to register.
So Saturday, March 10th, is a red-letter day because that's when this series begins.
Correct.
And when we look at genealogy and doing the research, everyone, of course, here in America comes from somewhere else. Where does the barrier usually get erected when you go beyond their immigration here? Is it difficult to go beyond that to country of origin and that sort of thing in terms of records?
It depends on the country of origin, actually, how much of a problem you will have finding records. A country like Sweden hasn't had a war in 400 years, their records are wonderful and complete. A country like Germany or France even, there will be a lot of gaps, and you'll be looking for different types of records, not necessarily civil records, more of the church records that might have survived. So it can be a challenge. It just depends on the area that you're interested in European research.
That's interesting because, yes, some places have been unstable, records have been destroyed, wars, things like that. How reliant – we always hear about the database that the Church of Latter-day Saints has in Utah. How useful is that for folks? They have a website and everything?
Yes, absolutely. The Church of Latter-day Saints, as part of their church mission through the years, has gone worldwide, and they have microfilmed records from all over the world. Hmm. Anywhere that they would be allowed to microfilm, they did it. And they've been all over the U.S. to all the different counties and all the different states. And so that all that microfilm has been available through the church library in Salt Lake City. And now they are digitizing that microfilm and putting it online for free.
A project in process.
Yes.
And so they're not fully digitized, but
no.
They've gone a long way. So it's still wise if you do your search not to ignore that resource.
Absolutely. It's familysearch.org. It's free. And all these original records that you can actually see images of, and that's the type of source you're looking for because that will have more reliability than just a database or something someone's posted online.
Well, speaking of immigration, you mentioned earlier your co-teacher and her specialty, and I think that our audience would be interested in hearing about that.
Yes, Linda Greathurst is a marvelous teacher. She is a retired educator. She has been a genealogist for many, many years, and her research specialty is Norwegian Scandinavian type research.
Hey, that's me. I'm Norwegian.
Absolutely. And she's made several trips to Norway. She leads a group in Des Moines at the Iowa Genealogical Society, a Norwegian interest group that's pursuing their roots in Norway. So she has a lot of skills, a lot of she brings a lot to the table as a teacher in our classes.
Well, the big opportunity here is for people to avoid the pitfalls of just starting out with all kinds of misconceptions. In other words, why reinvent the wheel when you folks can give them the resource to begin in a way that's not going to be frustrating or lead to a dead end, but be productive. Mm-hmm. And also to be realistic in your expectations. As you said, Mary, people think they can just put something on the screen and it'll go back all the way to Moses or something. And so that's a misconcept. And look how people who might be discouraged right away by doing the wrong things when they begin, who just discontinue the effort. Whereas if they use their smarts and go to this meeting, they can get the right start, do the right things in the right sequence, and not go down unproductive pathways.
That's right.
It's going to be very useful then. And I really, it's been fantastic to meet you today because both of you really are involved in something that really not only is trendy, a lot of people are wanting to do the genealogy studies and look back, but also it really increases our knowledge of who we are and what we share in common. And also the fact that it really underlines the idea that we are a country of immigrants. And so for those of us who get smug about being born in America, I think that if Sitting Bull were here, he'd say, no, you're all immigrants, okay? So anything you want to add today when we're talking about this project? And please highlight the meeting again, because that's the kickoff for the four-part series.
Sure. So registration is open now through the library's website. So go to amespubliclibrary.org, and you will find information there about how to register. Or give us a call at 239-5646, extension 4. That's the adult services desk, and we will be happy to get you registered. So the genealogy proof standard four-part series begins on March 10th, and it will continue on four Saturdays in March and April, 12:30 till 4:30 on Saturday afternoons. So the first part is going to be on March 10th, and we encourage you to register as soon as you're ready to make the commitment. And if you are not able to make that commitment, check out all of the other activities happening, because there is more, as I said, there are other activities throughout the spring, sponsored by the Story County Genealogical Society.
Well, thanks, Mary, from the library. And Ellis Veen is here, who will be teaching along with Linda Greethurst, who is the Norwegian specialist. So you can go out there to the library on March 10th in the afternoon and three other Saturdays as the series goes on and learn about how to do this great search to find out who you are. Susan.
Yes.
We've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community. I've been your host, Susan Franson. Well, that's Susan Franson. Paul Wearson, thank you for listening. Our voices you heard on the show today was Greg Vitale, Pat Schlorbaum, Marcia Kisner, Mary Logston, and Alice Voigt-Bean.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear us online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Today's show was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team and let us know what you think about this program and KHOI. You can call us at 515-292-2878, or you can email us at khoiradio@gmail.com, or you can go on the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Now remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening now, and we'll
see you again on the radio.